Shalom, welcome to the Jewish Task Force, JTF. My name is Chaim Ben Pesach. This program is dedicated to a refuah shlema, complete recovery, for Sharon Katz, Shlomo Ben Sara, Malka Bat Simcha, Helen Friedman, Dorit Bat Sara, and Shifra Bat Sara, and elevating the souls of Simcha Bat Rachel, Dennis Shor, Pesach Zev Ben Chava, Harab Mir Kahana, Yosef Ben Meir, Barry Hoffman, Ruven Hoffman, Robert Mittman, and Sipora Fegi Bat Liba. We have two subjects we want to discuss on the program today, but before I get into it, I have a cold. So you're going to be hearing me clearing my throat and doing all types of things, perhaps during the program, because I do have a cold. Nothing I can do about it. I do want to do the show on time, despite the fact that I'm sick. I had fever today, and I took aspirin, and I slept, and I tried to rest up, but I'm still sick. So that's the way the show is going to be done. But I'm quite comfortable right now, and as you know, I love doing the program. The two subjects we want to speak about on this week's program are the latest in Israel's upcoming March 2nd Knesset election. The Knesset is the Israeli parliament. Itamar Ben-Gvir, who calls himself a Kahanist and represents a party called Otzma Yehudit, which means Jewish strength or Jewish power. Itamar Ben-Gvir announced this week that he's forming an alliance with Rafi Peretz from the Jewish Home Party, Habayit HaYehudi in Hebrew, the Jewish Home Party. And we're going to discuss that, the implications of that. In addition to that, we're going to be discussing in the presidential campaign something we haven't spoken about before. Donald Trump's biggest nightmare, in my opinion, the number one rival that would really, really give him a very tough fight, I think he would have an uphill fight if he ran against her, would be Senator Amy Klobuchar. I'm not even sure that I'm pronouncing it right. Klobuchar from Minnesota. And we're going to discuss why I believe that she would be the strongest opponent for Donald Trump in the November election. It doesn't look like she's going to get the nomination. She's not doing that well in the polls, and she doesn't have as much money as the other candidates or as much organizational support. So it's doubtful that she could actually win the nomination, but we're going to explain to you why, if she did win the nomination, why we think she would be Trump's strongest opponent. First, let's talk about Israel. We have Knesset elections for the third time in a year in Israel, and now Itamar Ben-Gvir, who calls himself a Kahanist, has formed an alliance with Rafi Peretz. Now, I understand the desire of Itamar Ben-Gvir to get into the Knesset. He knows that if he runs independently, he has no chance of getting in. He's not going to get enough votes to pass the minimum threshold, which is 3.25%. He's not going to get 3.25% of the vote. No way will he do that if he runs by himself with his party, with the Jewish Strength Party or the Jewish Power Party. So he wants to form an alliance with other parties so that he can get in. And so he made a deal with Rafi Peretz. Rafi Peretz will be the first person on the list, and Itamar Ben-Gvir would be number three on the list. You have to win at least four seats in Israel in order to pass the threshold. There are 120 seats in the Knesset, and you got to win at least four. It's proportional representation, and you got to win 3.25%, which comes to four seats. You got to win at least four seats in order to get into the Knesset. And so, if they pass the threshold, Ben-Gvir would automatically be in because he would be number three with the deal that he's made with Rafi Peretz. And again, I understand his desire, his strong desire to get into the Knesset, to try to influence things, because they've run numerous times before, they've never been able to win or get in, even when they formed alliances with other parties. They've been unsuccessful in trying to get into the Knesset. Whether or not they're effective, I don't think they're very effective politicians. This particular group of people who call themselves Kahanists, I don't think they're not at all like our beloved Rabbi Meir Kahana, who was a very effective political leader who was a political genius. Zecher Tzaddik V'Kadosh Livracha Hashem Yikom Damo, which means may the memory of this saint be immortalized and may God avenge his blood. They're not at all like Rabbi Kahana. They don't have the ability to make arguments that he's made, and I think the arguments they've made have not been very convincing. So they've been unable to connect with the Israeli voters and win enough votes. So they want to join forces with Rafi Peretz and the Jewish Home Party. The Jewish Home Party is a party that was the Maftal, that has existed for a long time. And according to the polls, the Jewish Home Party will not get in by itself. And the Kahanist Party, the so-called Kahanist Party, will not get in by themselves. So if they join together, maybe they can get in. Maybe they can get in together. That's the logic behind this alliance. And I understand. And again, I understand it. I understand the desire, and that's fully understandable. The only problem is he's joining forces with someone who is so evil. Just evil. And Itamar Ben-Gvir, he's joining forces with someone who, on issue after issue, is a traitor and a criminal. Why do I say he's a criminal? Because Rafi Peretz encouraged thousands of Jewish religious soldiers to follow orders and throw Jews out of their homes in Gush Katif. Rafi Peretz said, we have to follow orders, and he encouraged Jewish soldiers to throw Jews out of their homes. If there had been a massive rebellion, about half the soldiers in the Israeli army are religious. If half the soldiers had refused to follow orders, there wouldn't have been any expulsion in Gush Katif. They wouldn't have been able to carry it out. It would have been a catastrophe for the Sharon government that was trying to throw the Jews out of their homes. But Rafi Peretz was one of these Jewish traitor leaders who told them, you have to do what the Israeli army says, and you have to follow orders. Even if you don't like what they're proposing doing, even if you don't like what they're doing, you still must follow orders, which is a sick, criminal, fascist mentality. That's true fascism. Even if the Israeli army is committing a crime, an evil, monstrous crime against their own people by throwing them out of their land and handing their land over to Muslim Nazi terrorists from Hamas, even if this terrible crime is being committed, you've got to cooperate and be part of the crime. Why? Because if you don't obey Israeli orders, what will happen to the army? Oh, screw the army. Screw the army. If people didn't obey evil, traitorous orders like this, you know how much stronger Israel would be? The army would know that they can't give orders like this. The army would know that orders like this cannot be given. But scum like Rafi Peretz, Shem Rashaim Yirkav, may the name of the wicked rot. Scum like him and the Yesha Council, they got the soldiers to go and throw the Jews out and to cooperate with this crime against the Jewish people. And what a price Israel has paid. First they retreated from the Sinai in the 1970s. Then they retreated from Gaza. As a result of this, hundreds of thousands of illegal aliens have come flooding into Israel through Gaza and through Sinai. And we've given up Jewish land, which is a terrible, terrible sin, a horrific crime, a horrific sin of the first magnitude. Rafi Peretz also supports the hundreds of thousands of illegal aliens who are in Israel. He said that it's a sign of honor that the Israeli government gives free education, free housing, and other benefits to illegal aliens who come into Tel Aviv and come into other Israeli cities from Africa, mostly from Africa, but also from Asia and all over the world. Hundreds of thousands of illegal aliens are flooding into the Jewish state. It's a very serious demographic threat. And Rafi Peretz is proud that the Israeli government takes care of their children, puts their children in school, gives them all types of benefits, which of course encourages them to come and stay. Rafi Peretz did not want to throw for instance, the Filipino illegal aliens who have been flooding into Israel out. And he did not want to, he has been a consistent voice of treason, because it is treason to say that you want hundreds of thousands of illegal aliens, black Muslim illegal aliens from Africa, who are creating a crime wave like Israel has never seen before, flooding in and taking over 70% of South Tel Aviv, are now illegal alien black Muslims. I mean, it's just madness. And Rafi Peretz supports this. Rafi Peretz would sell his mother to stay on as Sar HaChinuch. Sar HaChinuch is the education minister. And in the education ministry, he doesn't give Jews a Jewish education at all. He lets the extreme left continue to brainwash Jewish children, continue to indoctrinate them with lies, with left-wing lies, with self-hating lies about Palestinians and about the oppressive Israelis and how we have to support the Arabs and how we have to support the illegal aliens and propaganda against Judaism, propaganda against the Torah. This is what they teach Israeli kids in schools in Israel. Horrible, horrible, evil program. And then, of course, the gay agenda, pushing the gay agenda day and night. And Rafi Peretz supports it 100%. Rafi Peretz at one point said that he supports conversion therapy for homosexuals. And there was a big uproar when he said that in an interview. And so the next day or two, he reversed himself completely. And then said he now that he understands what it really means, he's completely against conversion therapy and condemns it. And he condemned it. Conversion therapy just means that rabbis or Jewish religious leaders work to help Jewish homosexuals overcome their unfortunate orientation, which is contrary to the Torah. That's all that it means. And this is considered to be so horrifying by the homosexual activists in Israel. And nobody speaks up against it. Rafi Peretz now is on the side of the gay agenda people. And he's supposed to be representing a religious party. He calls himself a so-called rabbi. He defines himself as a so-called rabbi. He's not a rabbi, by the way. Because anybody, even with smicha is rabbinic ordination, even if somebody has smicha, if they go against what the Torah says and endanger the Jewish people, they're not rabbis. You can't be a rabbi and go against the Torah, the teachings of the Torah. But anyway, this is Rafi Peretz, the worst of the worst, the lowest of the lowest, pure scum. And Itamar Ben-Gvir is giving him a stamp of legitimacy by running with him. Itamar Ben-Gvir always praises him. Itamar Ben-Gvir spoke about how wonderful he is and how he deserves, he should be education minister, and praises him. Itamar Ben-Gvir, the so-called Kahanist, this is supposed to be the Kahanist. Rabbi Kahana would never do this. Never would do this type of thing that Itamar Ben-Gvir does. Never. So, again, I understand why Itamar Ben-Gvir is doing what he's doing, but I disagree with him. I think it's a big mistake. And we'll see what happens. There's a big backlash now about the alliance that they formed, that Ben-Gvir formed with Peretz. Let's see what happens in the upcoming days and weeks. But I think it's a big mistake. And this is one of the reasons why we never supported the so-called Kahanis in Israel. Because there is a betrayal there over and over again of Kahanis principles. And in the name of Kahanism, they praise evil people, they have alliances with evil people, and justify and legitimize evil people and evil behavior. And I think that that's a tragedy for the Jewish people. Because if even the Kahanists, Kahanism is the purest, most principled form of Judaism in modern times. And if even the Kahanists are doing this type of thing, that means there's nothing. That means there's nobody who's telling the truth. And that basically has been the case for a long time, except for JTF, tragically. So I disagree with what Ben-Gvir is doing, and we are not going to support him. Again, even though, you know, there are things that Ben-Gvir does that are good things sometimes. He represents some of the Jewish kids that are arrested by the Shabak. The Shabak is the Israeli KGB. He represents them in court. He does stand up against against some of the evil things that the government and the state do sometimes. So, you know, he does do some good things sometimes. But I think that the bad things and the overwhelming justifications and excuses and legitimacy that he gives to evil people and to the establishment, I think supersedes and is actually so harmful that it overrides the good things that he does, and that's tragic and that's unfortunate. The second subject we want to speak about is the race for president next year. As you know, we don't like Donald Trump. I don't like him. He's immoral. He's disgusting. I don't like him, even though people on the right now worship him. Even though he's completely immoral and has done many terrible things in his life, but we support him. We support him in JTF because the alternative for Israel is much worse. The Democrats are much worse. And so we don't really have a choice. We've got to support him. As unpleasant as it is, we have to support him. Now, we've spoken to you about many of the leading Democrat candidates that are trying to get the Democrat nomination to be Trump's opponent next year. Pete the Booty, who was an openly homosexual mayor of a small town in Indiana. He's married, quote unquote, to another man. And Pete the Booty is one of those people. He's leading now in the Iowa caucuses, according to the polls. But I think he would have some difficulty as a candidate. He could be a formidable candidate, God forbid. But I think he would have some difficulty. I think a lot of Americans, despite the fact that polls show that Americans overwhelmingly are now willing to accept all of this, I think a lot of them privately don't accept it. And so I think that he would have some disadvantages as well as advantages. But anyway, that's one possibility. And he's a dangerous candidate, Pete the Booty. He calls himself Booty Edge. Or Booty Jedge. Booty Edge, Booty Jedge. We call him Pete the Booty. The other candidates, Elizabeth Warren, certainly Bernie Sanders, the communist, and Joe Biden, who's senile and insane. All of these candidates running, they have their ups and downs, their advantages and disadvantages. I would prefer to see Joe Biden because he is such a gaffe machine. I mean, every day he says things that are so stupid and so ridiculous, and he's unable to get his story straight. I think he would be the weakest candidate, in my opinion. But could be wrong, but that's my opinion. So I'm rooting for, of course, I want the weakest candidate to win the Democrat nomination. But there is another candidate that's not part of the top tier of candidates. That's not part of the candidates who are leading in the polls. And her name is Amy Klobuchar. She's a senator from Minnesota. She's running and concentrating heavily on Iowa, on the Iowa caucuses, because she's from next door Minnesota. So she figures because she's from next door, she's also from a Midwest state, that she may be able to score in Iowa. I think she's a very dangerous potential opponent for Trump. She really presents herself as a moderate. And she even criticizes the left in her party. And the left in her party attacks her, which all would help her tremendously in the November election against Trump. That would be very helpful to her. That would make her kosher, quote unquote, in the eyes of many working class and blue collar voters and other voters who supported Trump last time. So she is really a dangerous candidate. She's very popular in her home state of Minnesota, a state which Trump lost, but he lost it very narrowly. It was very, very close in 2016, Minnesota. And it's a state, excuse me, it's a state which is similar to other Midwest states like Wisconsin, Michigan, Ohio, other states which Trump did carry. And so she would be very strong because she's a Midwest. She speaks like a Midwesterner. She acts like a Midwesterner. She looks like a middle-aged Midwestern woman who comes across in a fairly pleasant way. She would be very dangerous. Let me just give you an illustration of how dangerous this could be. In 1992, Bill Clinton decided to change the way the Democrat Party responds to Jesse Jackson. In 1984 and in 1988, Jesse Jackson ran for the Democrat presidential nomination. And in 1984, Walter Mondale, who became the Democrat nominee to run against Ronald Reagan in 84, completely caved in to Jesse Jackson. Completely surrendered to him, caved in to him. And it looked terrible, and it really hurt Mondale's campaign. It made him really look like a leftist and like someone who was very weak. And it helped Reagan win a landslide victory in 84. In 1988, we saw the same thing. Michael Dukakis, who became the Democrat nominee in 1988, did the same thing with Jesse Jackson. Because Jesse Jackson is an extortionist. He's a huckster. He's a hustler. And he seeks to hijack the Democrat Party and its agenda. That was his goal in the 80s. And he succeeded in 84 and 88, and it really hurt the Democrat Party. It really made them look like leftists, and it really helped. In 84, it helped Ronald Reagan win a landslide victory to a second term, and in 1988, it helped George H.W. Bush, that's George Bush Sr., win an easy victory against Michael Dukakis, even though Dukakis started out with a 17% lead in the polls in July of 1988. After the Democrat convention, he had a 17-point lead, a huge lead, and he lost that entire lead. And Bush, not only did he lose the lead, Bush wound up beating him decisively. Bush wound up, I don't remember exactly how many states, but he won overwhelmingly. He really, really beat Dukakis overwhelmingly. In 1992, Jesse Jackson again, in the presidential election, decided he's going to pull his little extortion racket with Bill Clinton and the Democrat Party. He wanted to be prime speaking time, and he wanted his agenda to be recognized, and he wanted Clinton to come crawling on his knees to him the way Dukakis and the way Mondale did in the 80s. Bill Clinton refused to do it. He refused to meet with him. He refused to give in to Jackson's agenda. He defied Jesse Jackson in 1992. And that helped Bill Clinton win the election in 92. Because Bill Clinton was not regarded as a leftist by many of the voters who saw this, they voted for him. They thought that he's not a left winger like Dukakis or Mondale. He was more acceptable to them. And so because he defied Jesse Jackson, that worked. When you defy the left, if you're a Democrat and you defy the left, that gives you a more centrist, moderate reputation. It's completely phony, of course, because in the end Clinton did. When he became president, he did embrace Jackson's evil agenda. So it was all phony, it was all baloney. But nevertheless, in the campaign, Clinton cleverly created the illusion that he was a different type of middle-of-the-road moderate Democrat. Amy Klobuchar, or Klobuchar, is capable of pulling a Bill Clinton on us. She is capable of convincing moderate independent voters out there, suburban women and moderate independent voters, who are the swing voters in the election, she can convince them that she is very acceptable and she's going to restore stability after the chaos of the Trump years. that could be a very appealing message to these voters who are stupid enough to fall for it. It would be disastrous, in my opinion. If she were the nominee, I think the odds are she would win. I think the odds are, if she became the nominee, that the odds would be against Trump winning. So we definitely don't want her getting the nomination. It doesn't look like she's going to get the nomination because she just doesn't have the money and the grassroots support and the excitement, because the excitement of the Democrat Party is on the left. And she's unable to make that connection. But Again, anything is possible. Anything is possible. If suddenly Democrats decide, oh, this is someone who would really be electable, she could start taking off like a rocket. And that would be very dangerous for, that would be very dangerous for us, because then we'd have a Democrat in the White House. And, of course, a Democrat in the White House would return to the anti-Israel pressure policies and the dangerous policies with Iran and all the other dangerous things that that we don't want to return to. Not that Trump's policies are anything to write home about. Trump's policies are also bad on Iran and on Israel. But the Democrat policies, of course, are worse. So we're rooting for Elizabeth Warren, Joe Biden, Pete the Booty. I think that they would be easier for Trump to defeat. Even they would not be easy for him to defeat. But I think they'd be easier for him to defeat. I apologize for the fact that my voice has not been the greatest, and that I am sick and that I had fever today. I'm speaking to you with the flu. I think I have the flu. I don't know what I have, but I think it's the flu. So I apologize for that. But, you know, when you get to be my age, you get to be 63 years old, you know, you get all types of things. I have not been sick for years, thank God. But when you do get sick at my age, when you're in your early 60s and you get sick at my age, you know, it can be very debilitating. So, apologize for that. I hope I get over it quickly so that we can do top-of-the-line programs for you again in the future. As you know, we, of course, are running our advertising campaign in Israel, reaching thousands of Israeli Jews with our message, a message that nobody else gives the people of Israel. So we're still fighting the good fight. And that's what you're part of when you're part of JTF. For JTF, until next week, this is Chaim Ben Pesach. Shalom.